Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
And welcome to the NXT 2.0 review. I'm Adam Wilborn, joined by the Dudley Boys of What Culture, Michael Hanflett, Michael Sidgwick, here to review everything that happened on last night's episode of NXT 2.0. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts where we not only review NXT 2.0, but also AEW, Daniel Maid, and DJ Rampage, baby, as well as pay-per-views and premium live events. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week complete with a bigger quiz, of course, on wrestle culture. As I said, they're joined by Hanflett and Sidgwick to review NXT 2.0. A lot of wrestling on this show, Hanflett. But I've got to say, I enjoyed three major parts of it.
I'm glad you did. I chose, when I was younger, subconsciously chose, I guess, this emulated sport over most real sports. Because the beauty of an emulated sport is that you can give you what you want.
Your guy gets to win.
They can craft the feeling of the late winner and they can just do it every week. They can make this happen by choice and you get to engage in that and you get to indulge in that and it's absolutely amazing. Real sport came good for me at the weekend and it never does. So I returned to the emulated sport that I've chosen and got zero of that. Like, this was the opposite of thrills, the, like, antithesis of the idea that it is creating things that I want to see. There are so many useless, feckless baby faces on this show. There is so many, like, lame, bad characterizations, rubbish stories. It's even headed towards an In Your House, the kind of thing that in the middle of the pandemic was the emulation of the real spot. Oh, that feeling that I sometimes get from real spot. I've got it for a logo. For the reveal of a logo, I just need something. And they've created something. They've built a fucking house and they've brought in Todd Pettengill. And it's like, thanks. Thanks for emulating the thing. Thanks for giving me the feeling. Like, every story headed towards this premium live event, whatever they're going to call In Your House, is rubbish. Like, the good guys are, like, idiots. The main event segment on this was, like, humiliating. Oh. I found the performances of Bron Breakker and Joe Gacy specifically humiliating for them. Like, I can't imagine what it must feel like to ask to go into work and be these people. Honestly, like, not a single bit of analysis on the storylines because I just cannot imagine what it must be like to be a real-life person working here at the moment.
This was a terrible episode of a terrible TV programme, and yes, I have to echo Hanflett. Like, the one feeling I got was just vicarious humiliation on behalf of some of these talents, and I actually was humiliated on behalf of two different talents and not Breakker, or in addition to Breakker and Gacy.
Well, let's dive straight into it, mainly because it opened with the star of the show, basically. It was Tony D. It opened with Tony D, Stax, in two dimes. I've already forgotten their real names again.
Troy Donovan.
Yeah.
And Channing Lorenzo.
Regardless.
Channing.
Tony
says... It's like a wasp.
Yeah.
It's like a New Hampshire wasp, who's also a grotesque Italian-American stereotype.
So,
Channing Lorenzo.
So, Tony's hyping his boys up ahead of their showdown to prove who the real gangsters of NXT 2.0 are. And he says, you guys ready, huh? Let's take care of business tonight, huh? Just like we talked. Nice and easy. Legados, he addresses the camera. You thought last week was cute, huh? You couldn't handle things like men. This is basically the promo that I cut yesterday.
Yeah, I know.
You couldn't handle things like men. What are you, some kind of bitch? No, And Santos, you had to sucker punch me with a pair of brass knucks? Salute, Santos. But this ain't over. Not by a long shot. So tonight, You guys better be playing close attention, because what Stacks and Two Dimes does to these two stoonads isn't only going to be a taste of what we're going to do next time we see you. And the one goes, yeah, boss, it's time to take care of business. The other one goes, yeah, Idris and Malik, tonight you're going to get your faces smashed in. And they head off, and then Santos Escobar is directly behind them, looking very pleased with himself, and he pops his shades on. I thought this was a fantastic opening, Sige.
Well, I was saying in the office, because we're nerdy enough to talk about this, but I'm not recording, as we often say, that the best thing about like an episodic wrestling TV show is when the first match bangs, clicks, sets the tone. That's why you have the opening Dynamite banger. The version of that for you, Wilborn, is a Tony D promo. It's a tone setter. It fires you up. Yeah. It gets you in the mood. It unglues you. It gets you lost in the stories. I would prefer to have like Pac versus Buddy Matthews. Just as a little tease.
Each to their own. Yeah.
But we're not getting that. We should be getting that.
Very little to that. You know, Cruella DeVille's henchmen in 101 Dalmatians. That's who Stacks and Two Dimes are if there were Italian stereotypes instead of like Cockney Baraboy stereotypes.
Just getting those dogs.
Is that what it is? Collect me up 101 dogs. Keep one for yourself.
Stick a few off the top, man.
NXT's all about taking spots. I'm going to take 101 of them. Old dogs.
So then it was time for Stacks and Two Dimes to take on our favourites, Idris Anofe and Malik Blade. Idris goes after him right at the bell. But Two Dimes comes in. He gets a double shot. They hit a double shoulder block, him and Stacks, as he bounces off the ropes. They get just a one count off that. In comes Malik Blade, and they do a double suplex on Stacks. Some tandem offense that ends with a sort of 619 in the corner. We see Legado, including Santos Escobar, watching backstage, and then he announces, it's time for us to head to the ring. Malik Blade gets the hot tag. He goes to springboard into the ring, slips somewhat, but it's covered. You know, they sort of try and make up for that, and you know,
he bumps.
Mistakes happen
for no reason.
The heels feed for him still, regardless. Blade gets a few near falls, goes to tag in Anofe, but he gets pulled off the apron before they can make the tag. Blade gets cut off. In comes Legado del Fantasma, and Blade, despite this distraction, gets hit with stereo kicks from Stacks and Two Dimes, and he gets covered by Two Dimes for the 1-2-3. And Tony immediately dives into the ring with his boys and offers them out, and they rush the ring. This big brawl kicks off. What do you think of all this? What did you make of the debut of Stacks and Two Dimes?
I thought this was like Milquetoast Butlins wrestling with a couple of botches and unsatisfying finishes and characters. I don't know who does what. Like, this Tony D'Angelo group, ostensibly the babyfaces in this feud, but then were made heels in this match, kind of, in this opener with, like, Anofe and Blade, who have been presented as, like, quite funny characters backstage, people that you're supposed to get behind, like unlucky losers to an extent, but, like, had a good showing in the tournament, like, they just want to have sex backstage. Doesn't everybody in 2.0?
Yeah. Like, doesn't everyone just want to have sex? Don't you have sex? Watch the show.
There was a point, I don't really listen to commentary a lot on this show, obviously, because it's just shouting. Or like you say, but there was definitely a point on this show, and I can't remember exactly when it was. I assume it was when Fallon Henley was wrestling, where Wade was just like, just to remind everyone, one of Boris Johnson and John Bronson is definitely still a virgin. And I was like, oh, okay. I didn't think I needed to be said, but okay.
I thought it was really impossible to feel anything for these. And the way that they've arrived at this match is that Stacks and Two Dimes are supposed to be this is like a tune-up. For those two, you know, like, and it's the experienced tag team, like knocking off one of the jobber teams ahead of the big six man, the PLE. None of that's you can tell me all that's supposed to be happening, but none of it's actually happening in front of me. Yeah. Like these, like some debutantes taking on some fairly inexperienced guys. The chemistry was off. The quality of the work was nowhere near exciting enough for you to like feel anything for any of them. I really hated this, you know.
I hated it.
I hated all of the things this was attempting to be when it was failing at all of them. And I've got little faith in the quality of the six miles. I hate this feud. It doesn't make sense. It does not make sense.
Nothing organic exists in NXT 2.0. And there are two wildly divergent examples of that take on this specific show. We'll get to the other one later. but nothing organic happens on this show whatsoever. We talk a lot about the playbook, Triple H's playbook that he told the world about in 2014. And we know from experiencing from the outside the WWE system for as many years as we all have, the listeners have, that it's all very patterned. You have to do things WWE's way. You don't sort of have this organic experience of getting over in front of different crowds and sort of being booked in a place where it's not the most fashionable wrestling place. Not many people are there. But by hook or by crook, you learn how to get the audience on side and get them into your story and get them into your character. And it's this process that works, because when you see it in AEW, you can get someone like Wheeler Yuta, who's just great at what he does because he's got the experience and he's built it, and he can then apply it in front of a lot of people, more people than he usually wrestles in front of. I'm carefully watching this match in the faces of Starks and Two Dimes, and I'm seeing literally nothing. Vacant, robotic wrestling. No emoting whatsoever. Not the worst wrestling you've ever seen. And there was one genuine flare spot from Inofi. That was really impressive on an athletic level. That was literally the only thing I got from this, other than four people are in a glorified warehouse being told the mechanics of how to work a simulation of an athletic fight. Starks and Two Dimes. This was so rushed. There was no emotion to it whatsoever. They were just doing the things they were told to do in the order in which they were told to do it. And there was no audience interaction. There was no tone established. There was no kind of struggle. There was no facial expressions. There was no registering of what they had done to make fans care about it. This was nothing robot wrestling. And I felt literally nothing for it, other than that one flourish from Inofi.
Like, I know this will seem like we're going long on a fairly irrelevant match, but you can apply this to, I would say, 90% of the matches on 2.0. So consider this as a criticism of most things we see every week on this. They don't think, when they present these matches on a TV show, they don't think about the context of it. I love WWE's previous Fly on the Wall series on, like, you know, learning the ropes and that sort of thing, breaking ground on the network, the old tough enoughs, all that sort of stuff. Good snap. Like, when you see them doing one of those matches where some of them stand in the apron, they work tags, they're in front of like a camera, you know, they've just done promo class or whatever. And then afterwards you get the talking heads with the wrestlers on how they think it went, or you see them interacting with Al Snow or Steve Austin or whoever it is. Like, you were watching that within the context of a training show, and you were watching somebody's development. It might even not be real. It might be one of them sort of like, you know, like hyper real sort of things. But it's okay, because you've maybe invested in this character on this week's episode, and then you learn, oh, can you do the snapmare? And then you get like 20 minutes of, he's failed this one, he's rolled his shoulder. And then the match, he does a snapmare and the coach is dead impressed or whatever. Like, that's not the context with which I tune into this wrestling show. Yeah. I'm supposed to be engaged in the fictional universe.
Yeah.
And they present so many of these matches where, in order to give it a pass, or you read out these terrible, like, I'm not digging out any one individual like writer on the internet or anything, as I wouldn't want somebody to dig out me. But you read these terrible recaps of these shows where it's like, good, like, match was nothing, I didn't fail anything for it, but like, great to see the progression. That's not what you tune into the fictional wrestling show for. Like, if you're watching this exhibition on Breaking Ground, and you're like, good week for the lads on Breaking Ground. Like, they'll do this again next week, and then maybe then they'll graduate to the Largo Loop. You know, not when you tune in, it's supposed to be like, and now get ready for the six man. It's just like you're viewing it through the complete wrong lens, and this happens all the time on 2.0. It's that lack of emotion and tone, as Sidgwick says there. They don't want to establish a tone, because if they did, it would kind of pull the rug out from underneath all the wrestlers. You'd be like, well, they can't establish a tone because they're working a training match.
And they can't, because they're not qualified.
And they can't, yeah, you're right, yeah.
No doubt this will be a point we'll come back to throughout this. We get Wesley getting interviewed by Mackenzie backstage. His ribs are all taped up after Von Wagner's attack last week. Thankfully, no damage done to his heart. she talks about him getting angry and setting up the match he's about to have with Sanger last week, and he says, look, I was running on pure adrenaline at the time, but I still don't think I was wrong in what I said. I thought it was disrespectful what he said. And she says, well, I don't think Sanger meant any disrespect by it. And he says, I know, but I need to prove myself to guys like Sanger and especially to myself that I can do this. And then we got the match, Sanger versus Wesley, which was, I've written down here, a sort of watered down version of The Undertaker versus Jeff Hardy. Yeah. In this plucky young upstart against this massive bloke who's just going to manhandle him and beat him. And that's exactly what happened. Sanger dominates early on, headbutts him, splashes him. And Lee eventually manages to get some space and kick him out to the floor. He does this sort of slingshot stomp, and that still doesn't put Sanger down. He tries a running dropkick to send him into the steps, but Sanger chops him down. And as Lee comes off the top, Sanger takes him out and hits him with a choke slam. 1, 2, 3. But as Sanger goes to leave, there's Zion Quinn, who's had his own issues with Wesley, comes in presumably to attack Wesley. But Sanger runs back in, protects him, and embraces Lee because he's earned his respect.
How can you earn Sanger's respect?
Good kid.
How can you earn Sanger's respect? Like, seriously, this is a genuine. How can you earn his respect? What's he done? The idea of you've earned my respect, it's like the old Undertaker thing where he's like shaking hands with John Cena and you earn my respect here. You have to have respect to earn respect. I'm getting a bit brass eye here, but you know what I mean. But you have to be a respectable authority,
a locker figure. Room leader.
Yeah, locker room leader. Hey, don't do that to that kid. You gotta have my respect. It's like you're a green giant. That's what you are. You don't. It's just terrible. Absolutely terrible storytelling. I've long since had the correct take. The way WWE does things, right, is that there's just no tier between like the main eventers and like the rookie upstart, which is what works so well in Yes AEW, which I'm going to bury later on today, so don't accuse me of being biased, which is how you get something as wonderful as Wheeler Yuta joining the Blackpool Combat Club, right? What a wonderful, magical development all of that is. How can this type of storytelling work in NXT where now that Ciampa is gone and Gargano's gone and Kyle O'Reilly's gone and Roderick Strong's wants to go? You can't tell the story of kids earn my respect. I'm also a kind of a kid. it's stupid.
Well, I'm 6'10" kids.
So yeah,
it's automatically better.
It's just absolutely stupid. Stupid television.
Yeah, I don't disagree with any of that. But to be a bit, not to be kinder to them.
I mean, Wesley's got like years of experience on Sanger.
Like it's so fundamentally flawed, the idea of how they brought these together. Don't mind as a creative solution to unexpected problems of they've already buried a giant and Wesley's not got a partner anymore, trying these two out as a team. I think I quite like that.
Yeah.
Like I wasn't, Wesley was all right, but I wasn't seeing so much in his singles matches thus far that I was like, oh yes, like Wesley is going to be fine on his own.
He should give him the belt. He's amazing.
He's had this thing happen to him and now he's got to start again as a singles wrestler. Quite like a bit of a sucker for big man, little man teams. Like,
yeah.
This might be, it's certainly going to be better for Sanger than it is for Wesley. Like, because he was going absolutely nowhere. And as Cedric points out, it's kind of like, it is flawed in the extreme that just because he's the tall guy, like, hey, that's a bad kid. Like, he could be, for all we know, he could be like 15 years apart in age as well.
Sanger taping up his wrists.
Yeah.
Zion Quinn backstage.
I like that bit where John Cena was like, you're a bit of a rookie around here. And Kevin Owens was like, I'm not fucking rookie.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, I thought it was a bit preposterous that he earned his respect. Did good kid, ruffle hair.
He's going to do a high spot off Sanger's shoulders, and it's going to be pretty cool. It's going to be pretty cool.
That'd be cool. Cora Jade's backstage with Roxanne Perez. She's got her semi-final, the breakout tournament to come. And she's psyching her up for it all. Talks about when they were back wrestling in Austin and there was a bully and that person chucked all their stuff out of the locker room and then Perez wrestled them later on and Cora Jade twatted him with a skateboard afterwards. And Cora Jade seems to suggest, maybe I'll interfere in your match because I'm going to be sitting ringside for it later on.
WWE, and again, just don't come to me when we get to the actual bit because I'm going to just say it here. WWE has got this incredible knack and absolutely, I don't know how they do it, but they've got this incredible knack of babyface gets slighted. Babyface does something to get back at heel for slight. I hate babyface for doing it. I don't know how they do it. I do not know how they do this.
They think they've made like Cora Jade cheeky, or charismatic or whatever, don't they?
And the heel kind of deserves it because she was a dick last week, but I still think that everyone's a dick.
Yeah, everyone's a dick. That's what it is, yeah. And it's what it comes down to, who's a more irritating dick in the end? And it turns out it's always the goodie.
Yeah, no.
Like, it's always the goodie. Like, who am I more bothered by after all the dust has settled? Oh, it's the good guy.
Yeah, yeah. That's remarkable.
Look at that, isn't it?
Sort of show-long hook of Bron Breakker storming about trying to get his hands on Joe Gacy and his druids. This time someone told him that they'd seen him knocking about in the locker room, and Bron Breakker flies in there and sees his championship belt hanging up. An old photo from 20 years ago of him and his dad, I think.
I love the exposition here. It was genuinely tremendous. You could have just simply zoomed in, right? And I would have inferred that it was an old picture of Bron Breakker, right? You know why? Do you want to know why I know this?
Why?
Right, because I'm looking at an old picture of Bron Breakker. But then, because we aren't idiots, we're all completely thickers. I was going to swear then. It's from 20 years ago. Well, it's not from last week, is it, dickhead? I know when it is, I can tell.
I quite like that this doesn't always work. Like, I understand why they go to the well. I do. Second generation wrestlers. But sometimes the timelines don't work out. And then sometimes dickheads like me will get on a podcast and talk about it. It's 20 years ago, which fair enough, might be a shoot, brother. It was 2002. And 2002 was like a good 3 or 4 years past Rick Steiner's prime. And to be honest, the Steiner brothers' prime. It wasn't like he was sort of working the killer calendar of the WWE in 1983. Like he like that gear the other day. Like, this was 4 years after Rick Steiner was losing a feud with Chucky in WCW. Yeah. It was like, just missed my dad. And I was like, I think your dad was home more than he was at work by then.
Also made me chuckle because all I could think of was when he was like, why are you crying? Because none of them was you. He's looking at you. He's looking at a picture of you. That's all I can think of.
I was like, Joe Gacy's got a picture of like Bron Breakker with his uncle. And Vic Jess is like, that was from 15 years ago. How do you know, Vic? It's because he's eating dinner at a Shawnee's. Dad was never home.
Then it was Electra Lopez against Alba Fyre that Cora Jade had referenced earlier, of course. Alba Fyre comes out with a bat on fire. That's a thing now. This is your thing. Your bat's
use
on fire.
Use your goddamn thing.
So, yeah, Jade's there watching with popcorners. Electra Lopez targets Fyre's arm, which means early on she can't hit that gory bomb of hers because she's got the injured arm. Fyre does still make a comeback, though, and it's a relatively short match, this. Eventually, Alba Fyre comes off the top with a swanton. 1, 2, 3. She pins Electra Lopez, who were in the end George Jackson sends the popcorn flying with Cora Jade post-match, because that was all that this was really about, despite the fact that Alba Fyre should be the one probably getting the most attention here.
Yeah, Cora Jade was more annoying in this exchange, yes, isn't she? I think that's what Suji might have been leading to. She was really irritating by the end of this. Match was, like, functionally fine. It's what can you say about Alba Fyre that we haven't spent 2 years saying about Kaylee Ray that makes any difference anyway?
Mm.
Like, you're a good wrestler, so what? Like, Roxanne Perez needs to look on in, not fear, but just look on and think, this is how it could go. You could become utility more than somebody that makes it as a star. I was just thinking there when, like, obviously with a bat on fire, like, if they could get the rights to Meatloaf, that could be her bat out of hell, couldn't it? Because of the flame.
They're too cheap to pay for licensed music and to make people enjoy things.
They're
too cheap to pay for good themes on the main roster.
Yeah, I know.
Match
cheap to make good in-house themes that we don't have to fork out a license.
CFOS, making bollocks to the heart. Jesus. Right. Damon Reed is backstage with Diamond Mine. I really want to temper myself in saying this because it comes across as so...
boring bitch.
No, so bloody arrogant is what I was going to say. But they're listening to the podcast, right? Because what were you talking about last week? Someone's shattering their ankles. What's happened to Roderick Strong? Oh, his ankle's buggered. Oh, and then there's the Creed brothers going, you need to take care of your ankles, brother. Because he's going on about whoever it is, Brutus, I think it is.
Brutus does the cannonball.
So Roderick Strong has, quote, rolled his ankle. So unfortunately their tag match tonight is off. And they're not happy about this, the Creed brothers. And Ivy Nile's still there, so that's good to know. She's still part of Diamond Mine. She sort of went off on her own for a bit doing those weird challenges. And then they went... Yeah, don't forget about that. She's still part of Diamond Mine. And Julius says, well, yeah, Roddy's ankle better be hanging on by a thread because, you know, in Diamond Mine, you just strap it up and you just keep going. Don't let injury hold you back. And they say, yeah, it's the Diamond Mine way. And to be fair to him, Did I call him Damon Reader? Damon Kemp.
Damon Kemp.
Yes. To be fair to him, Damon Kemp just goes, I'm just the messenger, guys. I don't know why you're having a go at me.
There's no Diamond Mind for there to be what Diamond Mind is all about. With that said, I want to say something nice for once about this TV show. I think they've really got something in Julius Creed. I think he's the Bron Breakker. He's a real Bron Breakker. Mm. Bron Breakker's better than him. He's got a great spear, but he's knackered. They like him too much is the issue, and they want him to be what they want him to be desperately, and that's obviously going to break him, just like it breaks everybody else. But if they don't do this with Julius Creed, and he can just quietly get over in the background, away from the suffocating, this is what you have to do, I think they've got something in him. He can actually deliver bollocks quite well. He's a better in the ring. He's got that, so the height and the look that they're after. Like, I think he's the guy who they can actually do something with.
A bit like when they went with Orton and Batista and Evolution. They're like, here's the guy. And then they ruined him so fast. They were like, we've got another one.
Yeah. Strong as well, to be fair to Roderick Strong, has, and not just in his capacity as like an NXT original, but just a guy that still has it in him to have these really, really electrifying matches from time to time, has been quite good being the elevation guy in this 2.0 era. So the prospect of whether it be Strong and Kemp versus the Creeds, or Strong and the Creeds are falling apart, so Strong ends up finding a partner and that becomes a tag match, that'll probably go well for the Creeds as well. Those matches will rule.
Yeah.
Like, those are things that, like, a rarity on this show. That's a thing I want to watch.
Mm.
Like, they have so few pairings that you can think of, so few things that you can fantasy book of people you really genuinely want to see face each other. That's one. Roderick Strong and X versus the Creeds is something that they're actually working towards as well, that you down the line want to watch.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
We go backstage and Mackenzie Mitchell reveals that unfortunately Nikita Lyons has suffered an injury. She is out of the breakout tournament and Fallon Henley will receive a bye to the final. And one of Boris Johnson and Bron Johnson say, well, you know, it sounds awful, but, you know, these things happen. Freak accidents do occur. Sometimes accidents happen on purpose. And he holds up the guy who jacks its arm, basically. But then in comes the star of the show, Tiffany Stratton. She says, oh, God, Fallon, are you just going to stand there and take the easy road to the finals? that was a rhetorical question. Of course you are, Fallon, because I know who you really are. This nice little country girl act might have everyone fooled, including country dumb and country dumber, but it doesn't have Mitchell. you didn't earn your spot in the finals, and Fallon Henley fires back, saying, how dare you say something like that? And then she says the line, yeehaw, bitch, I'll come right back at you. And I was like, well, this just got interesting, and they are going to have a match. Stratton will take Nikita Lyons' spot, and they're going to have the semi-final match still later on.
Yeah, it's just as well that that line delivery was pretty cool, because my immediate thought of, what's her name, Fallon Henley?
Yes.
Was everything Tiffany Stratton said she was.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing any babyface should do, right, when something like this happens, says, like, come on, I'm not advancing in that way. Absolutely not. Give me somebody else. It's the right honorable thing to do. I'm a babyface. and I've said this tape before, the mega fans will forgive me. This company is so institutionally toxic, rotten, unlikable that they have long since like lost any comprehension of what is a good value, which is not ideal considering the function. The function of this company is to prevent to present heroic baby faces in front of the public who they can cheer for and buy tickets for and all the rest of it.
Yeah. This was proper zoom out and look at the process stuff, wasn't it?
Yeah.
A heel has gone down injured and the baby face is ready to accept a buy until a heel talks him into the match, and then you get that gut feeling that you know where this is going as well. So not only does the baby face theoretically backed out from taking on a new challenger with the buy.
Yeah, had Stratton not been there, she would have walked into the...
Yeah, that's it. It's taken like the kind of contrived interruption to keep her in the tournament. And then from the moment this promo takes place, she's pretty sure where it's going as well. So it's like, well, when the inevitable result occurs, what can we possibly think of this baby face that A, tried to take the shortcut, and then B, failed when she had to take the long cut? Like, it just... It's... But you kind of... Again, as Cedric points out, all you do is thinking of the reality behind this, not person gets injured. Think like a wrestling company instead of like instead of like whatever WWE is at this point. Think of what the good guy would do and not what all of you people do because you're all bad guys.
Oh, I'll take it.
Yeah.
No, that's not what Goody does, but yeah. Speaking of the breakout tournament, we got the other semi-final here. It was Lash Legend against Roxanne Perez. And the story of this match was Lash Legend dominated, was in control, was outpowering Roxanne for a large part of it. But Perez was a plucky underdog. And I think Legend goes for a powerbomb and Perez counters with a code red, which they're calling Pop Rocks for the 1-2-3. She can't believe it. Roxanne Perez has made it to the final. She is presumably going to win the whole thing, one would assume. But it's an interesting final, at least, with who. Well, we could talk about that in a little bit. But what do you think make of the story that they told here, Sidge?
Can I be fair? Because I'm going to be. Right. Don't watch this ever again. If you watched it once, don't watch it ever again. If you haven't watched it, now just listen to this podcast just to keep up to date, don't watch it. But if you were going to make the decision, or you have, recall the difference between this match and the opener, and watch out Roxanne Perez, who actually knows how to get over because she was once contracted to a company that sort of encourages it on their own terms of the talent. She makes noise. She interacts with the crowd. She conveys the struggle. She conveys that she's in a fight. She conveys her character. She's got spirit. She's outmatched physically, but that's not going to stop her from really giving it the college try. Like, she knows what she's doing, and she's pretty damn good at it, great at it already. And she's working Lash Legend, which makes it all the more impressive. Like, what's the difference between Roxanne Perez and, what, 96% of this roster? She has prior experience in a system that isn't broken, hence why you get genuine over-deliveries like this match, without being great, obviously, or even very good. But on an individual performance level, like, Roxanne Perez is great, and there's a pretty good reason why.
Second time in this tournament she's done this as well, because the story of Roxanne Perez's television matches thus far is that she gets battered a lot, but that's the story. That's
and she can sell, so why wouldn't she?
Exactly, yeah. I'm speaking as somebody invested in the character that takes a beating and then kind of makes the comeback, and she's got all the technical ability to win what I've been led to believe is a competitive match over 5 minutes or whatever. But the real story is the development of the people she's defeating, because she's given them loads. She's given them an opportunity to shine and to look great on television and to look credible in a way that, like, Lash Legend never really has. You know, she gets to look it, and this is not the only time that Roxanne Perez has done this, so she's already making herself a common denominator in that regard. But the first thing you are focusing on is the story. So Lash Legend is still having that breaking ground tough enough match, where it's like, right, tonight you got to go and get this in, you got to go get this in. But luckily she's in there with somebody that actually casts a spell on you as a pro wrestler. So the formulas, like, this match kind of proves that the formula can still work. You can still do the training ground match on television as long as you've got one wrestler in there that is just able to take you away from that a second. You cannot put four in there in the opener that are all the trainees at the same time, and there's way too many of them on the show now. So there's so few cases on any given NXT that's going to have something like this.
Yeah, Roxanne Perez has got, I mean, Shotgara's got a great deal of potential in NXT 2.0, but like you say, she had that before she came to WWE, yes. But it's nice to see them actually recognising that, at least.
It's worth, I suppose, from their point of view, at least if all they wanted the NXT old guard for was to put a couple of people over on the way out and then get the fuck off screen, like, at least now they're signing people that have got the old guard's experience. Like, it's maybe not the worst thing if they can pluck maybe two or three more of someone like a Roxanne Perez to be what Gargano and Kyle O'Reilly and whoever else just thought, I'm not being this. I'm absolutely not being this. There are others out there that can fulfill this role.
Mandy and Toxic Attraction are walking backstage, and Mandy's cutting this promo before her match with the Hartwell, saying, Indy, calling me out was the worst decision of your career. And they tried to mock her for, you know, losing her tag partner and her life partner, when in comes Caden Carter and, so you're telling me there's a chance, Katana Chance, to brawl with Gigi Dolin and JC Jane. And Mandy Rose is like, well, I'm not getting involved with this. I've got a match to do. So she gets out of there, goes out for her match against Indy Hartwell. Dominates early on and trash talks Indy Hartwell while she's doing it as well. And Hartwell manages to knock her to the floor to take us to a break. When we come back, we see that Rose has grabbed Indy Hartwell, pulled her by the hair to take control again. She's working her over. Hartwell makes a comeback a second time, gets some near falls off of it. But in the midst of all this, out comes Gigi Dolin and JC Jane. They're still brawling with Caden Carter and Katana Chance. And they brawl to ringside. And it's all very distracting. And JC Jane and Katana Chance end up fighting in the ring. Chance gets thrown out. Jane turns around into a high kick from Hartwell. She gets her out of there. She's like, finally, I can concentrate on my match. Turns around, running knee from Mandy Rose. 1, 2, 3. And post-match, the four women who've been brawling previously continue brawling. Just keep going out of the studio or whatever it may be. And Mandy Rose, celebrating on the ramp, turns around to be attacked by Wendy Chu, who dumps her balls on her. She dumps a big bag of balls right on Mandy Rose's face. What did you make of all this?
No good. No good. Wendy Chu, the prop comic, continues to be...
great. Sorry?
Absurd. Like, a nonsense move from the... like, and here's me that like the original nonsense character, by the way. Like, I like the charming idea behind somebody that would just rather go to sleep than wrestle and is trying to, like, put her hands together in the middle of a match. That's been abandoned by somebody that, like, she's not that character anymore. She brings soft play props to a wrestling show. She's that. I don't know who that person is. I think Indy Hartwell is going to turn heel off the back of this. So the rationale, I think she's going to turn on Wendy Chu and cost her the win against Mandy Rose.
Yes.
With the rationale being she's got absolutely... all left to do because, like, her husband's gone, her friends have gone. You know, nothing that was once here in NXT for her is there anymore. She's just lost as a babyface and had absolutely nobody out to save her. Wendy Chu was waited, not for when the brawl's going on, not for when Indy Hartwell's potentially going to be overwhelmed by all this, but for after the fact to do the big balls trick. Like, couldn't she have been there for her? No, because she's a lame duck babyface. So I sense the heel turn is coming to save Indy Hartwell. If it's not, she is absolutely finished on this show.
This is the other side of the coin of NXT's emotion problem that I was talking about in the intro, in which there was no emotion whatsoever, no attempt to do any emotion. In this match, the emotion was so forced and kind of histrionic. Just the idea. We joked about it on the preview yesterday, like, I can't take Indy Hartwell. Like, I'm going for singles gold because I'm going to be a wrestler and I've been slighted by Toxic Attraction. It's like you were literally cocked after for like the last year of your life. It's all you gave a toss about. So
didn't even like
she
the
likes
partner
cack was, like, when he likes boss.
Didn't even like the partner that she'd been sacked, like morning.
Yeah,
because they were arguing over cock.
Yeah, And now to do that rapid tonal shift from I'm not gonna have to. I'm gonna wrestle because I kind of have to. It's my job. But at the same time, my character is I'm in love. I'm getting married. I'm getting absolutely drilled raw by a 9.5 inch kiak. They even said the length on television. And then she's gonna argue about who gets drilled the best. And now she's really doing the NXT match and it's all or nothing and I'm really acting. It's like, piss off. It's the stupidest, stupid company.
I just don't know, Sandy. You know, we had the tomato business that went pretty well. We had the goo shop and that kept the head above water for a good few months. But I think it's time to shut up shop. I wasted our last paycheck on these balls. And no one's buying these goddamn balls. And I think, you know, the creditors are at the door. And we're going to have to sell it. Cling.
Hey, pal, you got any balls for me to buy? I want to dump it on my champ's face. Back in the game, baby.
I had no idea the Floridian gift shop owner was Italian-American.
Yeah, he's drifted into Italian-American. I'll give him that, yeah. Secret.
The lore of this guy.
Only one is Shanta Sandy. Everyone else? He's a respectable gentleman.
Got these guys across the pond. We're talking about me on a podcast since early 2020.
Honestly.
I thought we were finished.
I care more about the lore of that than anything to do with the food. The lore of the shop owners who sell tomatoes, goo, and now what?
A metal bucket of green goo. Who's going to want that? I got a guy.
They are literally Jack from Jack and the Beanstalk, just buying these magic beans and going, jackpot. Bron Breakker's backstage. He says Joe Gacy's mind games aren't going to throw him off his game. And then they show a clip of him running it. Run a TD from in the pocket.
Break him in the pocket.
But he says that his dad couldn't make that game because he was in Japan. True or false?
False.
Okay.
He was in Orlando, Florida at the Impact Zone at best.
He says, and McKenzie says, oh, you all right? And he goes, yeah, it's fine. Not then it's over to the tag champs. Yes, boy!
Yes, boy! Yes, boy!
And they put themselves over and say, Creed's don't bloody stand a chance, basically, in your house.
Cool.
Yeah.
I like them. I really like them cutting promos.
Preview.
Yeah. Yeah, we realised this yesterday. We've already talked about half of this stuff. Then it was time, yes, boo, for Tevin Strand to be in action against Fallon Henley. Early on, Stratton takes her down, hits her with some elbows. She gets like a slingshot swanton thing. That gets her a two count. She's targeting the leg for Fallon Henley. Bridges into, does like a sort of Charlotte Flair-esque bridge, blowing kisses to rile up the audience. You said interact with them. Henley makes a comeback. Still, she's selling the leg, though, and she goes to really finish her off. Her knee buckles and Stratton flips all the way across the ring and elbows and all this, and then eventually drop kicks her and does that sort of corkscrew Vader bomb splash thing. 1, 2, 3. Tiffany Stratton advances to the final to face Roxanne Perez. What do you make of Tiffany Stratton's development, by the way?
What? Just as a character? Because it's been zero.
I just thought she was...
In ring,
yeah.
To be honest...
Good snap.
I think she's... It's really, really tough to see anybody breaking through from this current crop. But I think she's been one of the better ones since she debuted. Every character stands to... Like, every daft vignette character stands to undermine what the wrestlers can do. Mm. And as a result, you sometimes watch this thing under this haze of everyone's a cartoon. Everyone is a sex-crazed cartoon. And yet, pretty much from the off, Tiffany Stratton's had something. You've been able to see within the matches that she's had something. I don't know if it's like the athletic background that, again, is overwhelmed by that is like money that she can just spend on other things instead. But yeah, I honestly, Tiffany Stratton, she's developing well, but I think that's almost like, I don't know if I'm being condescending there, because I feel like there's been plenty from the beginning. And if anything, the character is kind of overwhelmed that she's half decent out there.
Yeah,
like I didn't think this match was far from some of the disasters we've had on NXT 2.0. But I think Tiffany Stratton's had a few of them. It's just so hard to wrestle around the nonsense.
Just thinking about that, because you were talking about, and you were talking about the opener, and I was thinking, I actually did think that I really thought Tiffany Stratton, I don't know whether it's just this match I noticed in, that she's developed a lot.
No, Stratton's got something.
Yeah.
She's obviously got that incredible athletic background. She can parlay that into a match.
Yeah, absolutely.
And she can, George Axe, she can sort of act with a face in a way that's in character. Like, she's genuinely one of the most impressive prospects in this company.
And someone did say to her, make sure you blow kisses to the crowd about 20 times.
Yeah, but at the same time, when she gets, like, rocked with a forearm, she can be like, how dare you do that to this face?
There's
a Rick Martel vibe to it. Yeah, she's not bad at all. Like, not bad at all. And she is getting better, in contrast to the vast majority of this roster. And this match, which I will never remember in a million years, tomorrow... had a bit of fire to it, a little bit of like, they're having a fight.
Yeah.
It's flips, you don't flip in a fight, but they're having a wrestling fight.
Yeah, it really piqued my interest in this match, beyond just doing the silly voice. Mackenzie's backstage with Kanan and Katana, so they finally stopped fighting with the tag champs, and they say, everyone needs to stop mistaking our kindness with weakness. I thought they were off partying all this time. Apparently they're doing nice stuff, apparently, or something. Anyway,
has it ever paid off what they did when, like, Broggs and Johnson were like, whoa, look at that.
No,
went on forever as well, didn't
it? Yeah.
Basically, I think the idea was use these women to showcase how useless Bill Buchanan's son is at getting laid. And then he can have the arc with Fallon Henley?
Yeah.
Henley?
Henley, yeah. Maybe she just transformed into Kachana Chance in front of their very eyes. And they were just like, bloody hell. That seemed easy to change characters immediately. but yeah, they said that Toxic Attraction keep dodging them. So they took it to them. And if they want to do anything about it, they can face them in your house. And Wendy Chu says, yeah, like when I put my balls on Manny Rose's face, I'll face you in your house too. I can't talk about the ball segment without putting that voice on. I'm sorry.
What an asshole.
Thea Hale, this, 18-year-old, I think, is, you know, going to work in the performance center while she goes to college. And I was like, why are they doing this again? Right up until the point when she went, next week, I'm going to tell you which college I'm going to. She's going to chase you, isn't she?
She sure is.
And she's going to get a sensational education there. What a decision. Yeah. I love this.
It's not bad. It's earnestly not bad. If you're going to create such ludicrous caricatures as this show does, at least try and make them make sense within this world. And Chase University, having Bodie Haywood and now, you know, potentially having like other students.
Sorry?
Yeah, well, anyone that like gets folded into the daft world, that at least makes the character make sense. And then that's how you overlap your storylines. That's how you overlap your characters. That's how people can realistically interact, which is this angle we were praising just a couple of weeks ago because you do it with Chase U. It's faint praise, I know, but I just like.
Writing fundamentals.
Yeah, it's writing fundamentals is what it is.
It's a bit Wade Barrett there as well. Doing the two fundamentals again, but as Wade.
Well, I can't do that now because I can't do one accent, let alone blend two. Writing fundamentals.
I've got some good fighting fundamentals.
We'll come to Wade in a bit, by the way. Bronze backstage, Duke Bloody Hudson comes after him. He says, you know, I didn't do any of those mind games nonsense, don't you? And he says, yeah, I know it wasn't you. He says, oh, good. Just remember, I'm also ready for tonight and I don't care about any of your daddy issues and problems. He just immediately snaps and grabs him by the throat and holds him up against the locker. And he goes, yeah, I think Joe Gacy might have a point about you, actually. And then we get Ikem Enduro finally getting his hands on. Do you want to say something, Nick?
Yeah, Von Wagner destroys him. I need a piss. It's only NXT. And if you've got a problem with that, suck my ass.
It is, yeah, time for Von Wagner versus Ikem Enduro. Enduro wastes no time, rushes Wagner for what he's been doing to them in recent weeks and months, arguably. But Von eventually, quickly actually, cuts him off and just mauls Enduro. As a bear hug spot. But Enduro finally starts making a comeback, springboards into a missile dropkick, runs wild, Asai moonsault, tornado DDT gets him a near fall. But he just looks like he might have the edge on Von Wagner. His jacket comes to his... I don't know, makes him bugger it up, basically, because Von Wagner sort of hockey fights him, pulls it over his head, just starts laying in head shots and body shots and what have you, pummels him, and then hits, it's like an attitude adjustment, but a neck breaker.
They haven't named it. They haven't given him like the
they need to give it a funny name.
That's it.
And he gets the 1-2-3.
They could call it the heartbreaker.
And then Sophia Cromwell, the lady that Von Wagner recently, but no, not really been explained. She appears on the entrance ramp and just points, and he continues the beatdown on Ikem Enduro. When who should run in to make the save but Boris Johnson, or Josh Briggs, I think is his proper name to give it, and because of what's happened with him and the one who can't. He's a virgin. The other one, I forgot that Von Wagner had done it to him. Mm-hmm. They have presumably set up two big guys to clash against each other.
I'm like, who does Cromwell really want to have sex with? That's the subtext, isn't it? It's like, does she want to hang off the heart and length of Von's Wagner? Or does... do you want to take Josh Briggson's virginity?
I don't know which I want more, genuinely, right? Because, yeah, like...
That's kind of...
They're going to immediately transform him into a ladies' man, and that's going to be hilarious to watch. But also, they are awful at doing couple stuff with the best of them.
Yeah.
Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch, for example. What are they going to like when Von Wagner has to do a romantic scene backstage with Sophia?
Well, I don't think we're going to get that because I think they're going to go down the route of basically, and it's going to be 0 to 100. So it's going to be turning Josh Briggson, i.e. has sex once next week, full on porn star.
Yeah.
Like super stud.
Yeah. Like absolutely. There was I'm not going to name him and I don't think he listens, but like around the age where everybody was having some of the first experience, one of my friends once over a pint of being like, hey, lads, I talk about when we give him a full body orgasm. And he's beaten with the stick of that phrase for the rest of his days, right? And I just think that's what we're going to get.
She's coming out of her ears.
we're going to get him when he's finally, and I think it's going to be with Sophia Cromwell.
Astonishing that Sophia Cromwell would pick either of them when Robert Stone is stood right there.
And are we going to get Ik Manjiro?
Get Von Wagner
on some emotional arc about how he's got to let go of the jacket because the jacket has cost him victory here. Is that going to be? Because you'll note, despite Von Wagner being tall and Ik Manjiro being short, that he did not earn Von Wagner's respect.
No.
So I don't think that's the direction they're going after this defeat. I think Jiro's going to lose the jacket, having
some people might say jacket time up.
you would.
You would, in your preview copy.
There was also a bit, I'll mention it here, that Sophia was backstage with Stone and Vaughn saying, you need to ruffle some feathers, and Vaughn can handle anything, and he just stood there and looked ahead.
I love him. I really hope they do some, like, couple stuff. Yeah.
It's happening. Double date.
Just, okay, Vaughn, and action. Hey, Sophia, how about some 12-ounce curls? No, Vaughn, that was the...
It's NXT, isn't it? So like, it'll be right around Halloween. They'll be like, it's Valentine's week on NXT. Yeah.
I like you, Sophia. You stole my heart. Near the end?
No, Tony D's backstage.
Like, takes a cycling or something. She's like, I know what happened to the last guy.
Sign me up, get me out of here.
And Tony and the boys are leaving, and cameraman catches up with him. He says, hey, look, I ain't got time for this, all right? I know what you want to hear. Look, Stacks and Two Dimes, they picked up their first victory. But this thing with the Legatos has gone too far. Huh? It needs to end before it turns into a turf war. And in your house. Now, Santos, he thinks he's a businessman. What about businessman? I'm not asking, I'm demanding. One last business meeting. And as a sign of goodwill, last time you came to me, this time we'll go to you. One of them goes, hey, boy, what about what happened last time with AJ Galante? And I was like, oh, yeah. Presume he just was like, well, guess he's dead. and he went, trust me, it's not going to go down like that, all right? I got something in my back pocket. And if need be, I'll make him an offer he can't refuse. Oscar worthy, this.
Why do they have to have another chat?
The cheeky bat. They've not got Arcade Anarchy at the end of this. Like, they've not got the best friend's payoff. Like, this doesn't, none of this is justified. Like, we're not getting Sue's van or whatever. Like, there's nothing at the end of this. We're like, all right, yeah, 12 weeks is a bit much. But, like, at least Chris Statlander popped out of an alien grabber machine. That was amazing. Like, they made such good... None of this is happening. It's going to be a really boring, bland... Like, at some point, weeks and weeks and weeks of this, multiple sit-downs, multiple turf wars... Like, someone's going to grab a headlock or do a, like, leapfrog tackle drop down in the first 3 minutes of this match.
I really don't think you two aren't seeing the wood for the trees here. What do we do every week? What do we do every week on a Tuesday, boys?
Huh? Tony Angelo Predictor.
Exactly. And this is like a bumper edition. So you gotta appreciate what you got sometimes. You got to take a step back and take stock. Just gets me very excited for this next week. Preview stuff?
Yeah. I like your Stacks and Two Dimes impression more than your Tony one. Like, they've just taken it from me.
Boss! Hey, boss! I don't know why I talk like this, boss. Vic Joseph's talking, I don't know, about In Your House or something, and Mandy Rose interrupts him and tells him, Vic, cut this shit. Oh, no, sorry. Wrong show, sorry. She says, I've had it with Wendy Chu. The thought of Wendy... touching, much less carrying this title. That makes me want to puke over her onesie. And JC Jane and Gigi Dolin aren't happy either with what's happened with them and Caden Carr and Katana Chance. And they're going to send the two of them, rest of them, back to the Oompa Loompa Land or some bollocks in your house. Everyone is jealous of Toxic Attraction.
I'm not.
Next week, they're going to make it official. And they say, yeah, there's going to be some summit or something next week before the premium live event to set all this up. And Mandy throws it back, says, yeah, that's what's going to happen, basically. Back to you, Wade. And Wade goes, bloody hell, Vic, she said my name. I've got such a big f***ing lob on right now. Or something along those lines, wasn't it?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Anything you want to say about this?
She knows who I am.
Vince didn't for like fucking 10 years, but she does.
Just the moment he's like, she said my name. I was like, well, there's a bit. Time to go to the barbershop. They advertised this like, you know, like it's a regular segment. Like it wasn't just a one-off thing they did once.
They've done it a few times.
It wasn't like, oh, stick around, we're going to the barbershop, guys. Yeah. But I love Trick Williams and Carmelo Hayes, so I'll let it pass. Mello's, they're talking, and he says he needs to get that North American title back by any means necessary. It's just not the same since he lost the title. Trick says he's got a game plan and talks about Grimes being just a substitute champion, basically. And then in walks Cameron Grimes. But he's there. He's not to cause any trouble or attack him or anything. He's just there to talk man-to-man, eye-to-eye. He says, look, last week after me and Solo crushed you, you said something about me being lucky. And he says, yeah, you are lucky. You don't deserve the title. You don't hold it. You don't rock it the way I did. And you're sure as hell not an A champion. And Cameron Grimes has a nice one for eyes back where he's like, well, you used to be A champion. Oh, got him. And he says, maybe you might not think
I'm
that
sure I... Escobar used that line as well.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's an open goal that they just use every time, basically. Grimes says, well, maybe you think I don't deserve it, but I have earned it. And I've seen this new guy knocking around, Nathan Fraser. People are saying he's like you, but better. So I'll be facing him next week. I'm really excited for Carmelo Hayes versus Cameron Grimes, and not just because I love Cameron Grimes.
Preview. I think in terms of this, I think they've done it again. They've kind of made a bit of a heel out of Cameron Grimes. Like he came across like a bit of a dick here.
I've got no interest in this match
that.
At all.
I'm biased, but I didn't think that. I thought he came across as like, yeah, look, I know we've got, you know, he's very much got to play the role of like, because they're all, Carmelo's a bit more of a heel, obviously, but they're all sort of jockeying for position with this title. And
like down in the gutter, man, Hayes and Williams are dying in this thing, I think. Like, I just think it couldn't feel more mid-card. And the whole point of Carmelo Hayes and having like Trick Williams as his hype guy, when he was the champion, was that a champion narrative, that idea that, yes, it's a mid-card title, but he's elevating it. Like, an NXT 2.0 guy is actually elevating the status of a belt. And if anything, now he feels trapped in one of these circular feuds that's going to end with somebody saying, I want to bring back the North American championship of old, like Adam Cole and Mr. Perfect and Shawn Michaels. Like, I just feel like all of them are, like, wading through treacle a little bit at the moment. I'm not... Like, the match will be good. Of course it will be. It's one of the...
It'll be the match of the night, probably.
Probably. It's one of the better combinations they can offer. I was probably a bit harsh on that tag match and with Solo Sikoa and stuff. And that's it's not bad. It's not a bad follow-on either. I don't think it's doing anything for Carmelo Hayes, especially.
He's going to lose and then he's going to fight for the world title.
You lose upwards into a defeat against Brombrick. It's not exactly this awesome rocket strap trajectory, is it?
What do you think? Do you think Grimes came across as a heel here?
He can get away with doing it, I guess, because that's part of his charm. He's one of those, one of the real recent potent examples in WWE of a heel who was so irresistible as a heel that he just had to turn face. The issue is when he acts a little bit heelish, he's not as irresistible as he used to be. Mm. WWE just can't put baby faces.
Yeah, exactly. Bron Breakker's heading to the ring and Joe Gacy's there with his druids and he says, it's working, we're getting to him and we're going to make sure that happens in the main event, basically. Before we get to the main event, though, there was a vignette, all in Italian, showcasing...
How are you going to handle this one?
I'm just going to read it in my voice, because there's some places I just think, yeah, even I can't get away with that.
You're not going to go to that place?
He's in that orgasmic trance.
That's what people do on NXT.
It's all in Italian, and there's shots of Venice and Rome and Milan and... Makes me want to go on holiday. And they talk about how time is the most valuable currency in life. Why not live it in the fast lane? And style is a way to speak without saying a word. And fashion is a representation of who you are. Dreams are for dreamers. Goals are for achievers. Veni, Vidi, Vici. Giovanni Vinci is coming soon. Please tell me this isn't Fabian Aichner.
I don't think so. I think the tone of voice and the brief glimpses you've got of that person means it's someone... brand new and green, which, honestly, this promotion needs very few more of.
What do you reckon was in the box? We talked about the yesterday, that you'd have a box and you'd open it up and it's got, if you're Cora Jade, a skateboard or whatever it may be. What was in Giovanni Vinci's box?
Madden. Like...
just a suit, an Armani suit.
Yeah. What's a fashion-themed... plunder gimmick that can be used. Or, in the case of most weapons in WWE, not used because you can't have a fire, bat, or a sword.
He's going to have like a really fancy watch that he slides up and uses as like a brass knuckles thing.
He did have the watch. He did have a very fetching
watch. What if he has
the
watch and he uses it to bounce the light off it into his opponent's eyes?
That as well. Finally, somebody making use of the NXT 2.0 aesthetic.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I would love it if it was Aichner, just for schadenfreude purposes. Like, we've watched him for about 3 years. 4 years, including NXT. Years. And he's just like a modern lad. It's one thing to do it like on the main roster, but like, this guy's just got a completely different backstory on the same show that you're watching.
It's funny to think about, like, because Vince McMahon is so detached from any of this.
I don't think it's him.
Like, Gunther and Kaiser on SmackDown, like, now that they're kind of like wacky circus versions themselves, like, yeah, I like the look of, what's his name? Giovanni Vinci.
I told you to do it.
Giovanni Vinci.
Just saying his name. Giovanni Vinci.
Vince thinks he's had this brilliant idea. We need to put Giovanni Vinci, Gunther and Kaiser on SmackDown, and they can like start wearing suits, like maybe like really glossy velour track suits. And he accidentally rebuilt Imperium.
I like the idea. First of all, he has a valet called Ciao Bella. And also, what was it? Was it the Great American Bash where they just went to put a sticker on? Like they had an old Great American Bash and they just put an NXT sticker on it. But just to have the Imperium thing and it just says, the watch is sacred, it says. There you go. But it does mean we can bring back This Is Your Thing next week.
This is your thing.
Not for Giovanni Vinci, but if they're allowed to bring, the moment they bring back or bring in a new character, next week we get to pitch another one because they're like bloody buses in NXT TBO. Right, main event.
Bus driver.
Yeah, there we go.
Remember that for next week. right, that next stop, Pound Town. From Breaker versus Duke Hudson.
Oh my God.
Main event time.
I'm getting hungry.
And Gacy and his druids are up in the eagle's nest watching over this. And Bron Breakker looks a little bit confused, angered, annoyed by all this. Distracted, basically. That allows Hudson to take an advantage early on. Breakker fights back, though. I love a delayed suplex or a delayed suplex into a backbreaker or whatever it may be. It's just simple stuff sometimes for me. Hudson gets out of the ring, but he manages to hit Breakker with a cheap shot because Breakker keeps looking over his shoulder, keeps glancing over at Gacy and the Druids. There's a double down to take us to a break, and during that time, Gacy decides it's time to get a little bit of a closer look at all this, and him and the Druids head down to ringside. And in the midst of all this, Breaker's up on the top turnbuckle fighting with Duke Hudson. Their arrival at ringside distracts him. Duke Hudson pushes him off the top turnbuckle, and I don't know how he even prepares after this bump. He just landed on the top rope, like sideways, basically, and bounced. It looked like, because they're made of cable, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're not, I know rope's not exactly soft, but it's not cable wrapped
his
in tape.
Back on the thing on the way down as well. So the landing didn't look super controlled. So it's like you just take him on the front of the ropes, on the back on the apron, and now you've hit the floor. Like I don't know like how much of that was. You know, we should give him credit for, like, it looking cool, or if it was just he lost control. Yeah. It looked like he knocked.
So Hudson sends Breakker into the steps as a result of this, and Gacy just smirks on. And Hudson goes to put him in the Steiner recliner, but Breakker powers out of it, comes back with a Rick Steiner-esque power slam, pulls down the straps on his singlet, and this is the sign for the Druids to come and get involved. They go to attack Breakker. I've no idea what the referee's doing whilst all this is going on. Breakker fights him off, gets back into the ring. Hudson suddenly got a chair from somewhere. I've no idea if Joe Gacy slid that in or what. Regardless, Duke's going for him for the chair, but Breakker takes it off him, and the Druids come back into the ring, and he chucks them out, and Gacy jumps up on the apron, and Breakker swings the chair at him, and Gacy ducks it, and Breakker gets turned around by Hudson and just, out of instinct, swings the chair, twats him with it, knocks him down. The referee calls for the bell.
Next week, guys.
Bron Breakker loses via disqualification, and Gacy just smirks at ringside because he knows if that happens in the title fight, that championship's going to change hands. And he said something like, "You see, Bron, this is in your nature." What did you make of this explosive end to the show, Sid?
It's so funny. Look, the match itself, I'm going to be brief because I'm very hungry at this point. This doesn't really warrant that much analysis. It's absolute drivel. The match itself, right, again, it just exposes the fatal flaw in all of this. When they do the bits that they can do, like, he's an athlete at his core. A great one as Breakker. So when he's exploding into things, he's good. When they're doing transition spots, it's the most treacle, slow, fake, mechanical nonsense.
He's got a great counter game. No, you just plow through people. I know.
When he does slow transitions, it's just so glaring that they are just mechanically going through the motions of a wrestling match with no emotion or struggle or excitement or build or anything. So it was a very slow, fast, slow, dull, fast, cool, slow, dull, fast, cool, all over the goddamn place kind of match. And then the finish was exactly the finish you'd expect, because they're trying to tell you that Bron Breakker, that Joe Gacy's living in Bron Breakker's head rent free. And it's so bad. And Bron Breakker is like embarrassing at this point. This is why I approach WWE shows with blanket cynicism. I was told Bron Breakers can't miss, right? Screw everybody up. Cody Rhodes just had the worst match he's had in his career on Monday. The second televised match against The Miz, building up to the third pay-per-view match with Seth Rollins via the second consecutive DQ finish?
Maybe, yeah.
He's had two.
Austin Theory and, The Miz.
So the Cody's normal. Bron Breakers ruined. News at 11. Like, it's just the worst company of all time.
What do you make of Bron Breakker being driven to his breaking point?
What's so funny?
I like the story that he told.
No, right. So
I got the story that he told, I should say, not liked.
You're saying, like, you don't know where the referee was, right? What they were trying to do here, because I like looking for the order of this to see if it logically hangs together. And this one does, strictly in terms of the referee's decision-making. If you watch this back, you never will. But if you were to watch this back, or for anyone listening that hasn't yet watched this and intends to, Bron, like, the Druids approach him, and Bron swings on the floor and, like, starts fighting with them first, right? So that in wrestling rules, theoretically, that's not a DQ because it's Bron attacking them, right? Then they get in the ring, and now there's a chair involved. And the same thing pretty much happens again. It's Bron attacking them. So hypothetically, if a Druid lays a hand on Bron Breakker, then it's a DQ and it's over. But it's always him getting to them first. But it certainly looks like they're about to attack him.
Yes.
They've absolutely swung. They've just missed. So, like, it's Bron getting them, and it's like, but lucky he ducked, otherwise they would have got him. And then Bron would have won by disqualification. So him swinging around with the intent to hit a Druid with a chair and instead hitting Duke Hudson, it's not him getting overwhelmed by mind games. It's him getting angry that he's been getting beaten up for the past 2.5 minutes just because they've missed, right? Like, if one of them lands one punch, that's not Joe Gacy's mind games. That's like, well, you've gone and got him bloody disqualification win.
Yeah.
Nice one, Druids. Like, that's not mind games. They're just fighting him.
Yeah.
It's like, really got in his head how? We beat him up. It's like, this is a wrestling show. that's part of the course. They've attempted that story beat in there. Like, ultimately, for the mind games thing to work, there has to be no Druids and no Joe Gacy. It's that he goes out there, and as much as he desperately wants to concentrate, we're back to Shawn Michaels. He's actually looking at his hands and thinking, why am I so violent? That's the mind games. They're rubbish ones. It's not a good game. It's not Mousetrap or Scrabble, but it's like the game's all the same. It's just him going like, oh God, I just want to wrestle and I can't.
Mm.
Transitioning from one fight to another fight, we've got in your head, Bron. No, you haven't.
Fight the exact same way you fought him last time he challenged for the title on a premium live event. You'll win.
See, like when you were talking about as well, Sidgwick, the Red Druids, you think they're the Grizzly Young Vets.
Yeah.
But just, is that in like a, we need warm bodies to wear Druid clothes, or do you think it's going to be revealed that they're his Druids?
I think it's going to be revealed.
Like a new gimmick for that.
Yeah, because they've abandoned their own old names, so you knew they were going to do something new.
That's funny, that. I can't wait for that. I can't wait for Zach Gibson to have to, like, put over the fact that he's a Druid now.
As long as they give him a mic, I don't care.
How, though?
Please.
What's he going to do?
We did Spooky Scout stuff on the preview yesterday.
Oh, okay, right. Spooky Scouser.
Yeah. Spooky Scouser.
Lens free. We're living in your head.
Spooky. What, how's he going to draw from Breakker a disqualification in your house? Is he going to, like, just go into the ring and go, oh, picture of Rick? Yep. Like, photoshopped to make him look dead. I don't know, what do you do?
Check his privilege.
Put him back in a cage.
Do you put him, like, a picture of him? Like, the high-res glossy from www.com printed out in? He was never there.
Guys, we're overthinking this. Christian had the right thing. Goes in someone's face.
Yeah.
That's how you get a DQ, baby.
Yeah, but that's good. This is bad.
And I get Tony on commentary so we can say, anyway, he's hacked a loogie.
This is preview stuff. How will he get disqualified?
Yes, the go-home show next week.
Be the get. Ah, so we've got another week.
Go house.
It's on the Saturday.
Oh, yeah, I forgot.
In your ass is a Saturday, baby. It's like Takeover and
Yeah, it's like Takeover.
It's like in your house in Hell in a Cell. It's like a takeover weekend. WWE's in town. And get your tickets.
Pleased to announce, by the way, that the Dadleys will be doing a live stream for that on the Saturday.
Shut up, man.
Not a chance. Can't get half of them in for AEW shows. I don't think we're going to get them in for this.
Well, it's that Saturday the 5th, isn't it?
My calendar's free, baby.
I'm watching Block Party in Leeds. There's not a million years I'm going to watch this show live. Not a chance.
We
just had a weekend away.
Ah, yeah.
How do you afford it? You were dead.
I mean, yes. But I don't pick when my terrible team get to Wembley or when my favourite bands pick shows. I can't pick these things. I just have to do nothing.
Going to Wembley to watch the League One playoff final.
I just have to do nothing for weeks. I was the best, man. Nothing for weeks.
Gone off rant about how football's broken on YouTube, have you?
Football came home and it's left again now. Yeah. But it came home for the weekend.
And last night against Halifax Town.
Follow me at Adam Sidgwick. I'm starving.
At my concert.
Follow me at Adam Wilborn. Let us know your thoughts on everything at WhatCultureWWE on Twitter. And make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling wherever you get your podcasts from for daily wrestling podcasts. We'll be back later on today to preview AEW Dynamite. And if you subscribe, our preview of AEW next week and as we look ahead to In Your House will be in your feed as soon as it is released. But for now, this has been the NXT 2.0 review. My thanks to the Dadley Boys. Thank you for joining us. And we will see you soon.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.